The message title today is No Turning Back. I'm actually going to be reading from Daniel chapter 3 and 6, some selected verses. But before we get there, I want to actually just kind of talk about... I'll have to admit to everybody, and you may have already seen it in some of the messages that I've been given, but I'm sad. I'm sad. I'm sad for the state of the church. I'm sad for the state of our country. As I've been watching these things creep upon us, and now it's suddenly blatant how open people are to anything against being a Christian. But that I expect, by the way, that I expect. I expect the enemy to oppose us. But what makes me sad is that even those who are considered Christ followers, if you were to raise your hand in this church, probably everyone in here, almost everyone would raise your hand and say, I'm a Christian. But what I'm actually seeing is a great falling away in America. Now, some of that has to do with bad teaching, bad preaching. Okay, it leads people astray. But part of that is coming about because of what is known as apathy. It means you're just, serving Christ is a part-time thing. That's what happens. Have you noticed that locally, some churches around this vicinity have actually shut down their Sunday evening services? Some of them have shut down their Wednesday evening services. You know why? Lack of interest. Lack of interest. Now, I'm not saying that everybody can come to every service. I understand that. But it's a lack of interest. And people want to treat serving God as a part-time thing. And then sometimes it takes, and I hate to say this, but I sometimes think God will allow, I don't know that he sends it, but I think he allows devastation to occur. If you go back and read, and lately I've been reading Isaiah and Jeremiah, God allows devastation to nations because of their turning back on God. They've turned their backs on God. And all of Israel was led captive to Babylon and all these other countries would come in and basically just overpower Israel because they left God. They turned their back on him. So for us in America, that one event that kind of drew everybody together was 9/11. You remember that, right? 9/11. A lot of people will ask you, I know where I was on 9/11. Do you? Yeah, I know where I was. I actually do. I do remember where I was. And I was very saddened and horrified by the goings-on and what happened there. But then there's that great falling away. People actually stopped praying. They stopped seeking God. It was only a temporary thing. And so I wrote this down actually as a heading because I wanted to mention this, because as a nation, America is detached from the real cost of following Jesus. Now, if you were a follower of Islam and converted to Christianity, you would know the real cost. We don't. I don't think we even appreciate it that much. So I want to talk about two events that happened in the book of Daniel. And another reason I'm kind of sad is that these stories that I'm about to talk about are actually mostly relegated to Sunday school stories, children's stories. Oh, they're great teaching. Don't get me wrong. They're great teaching. But I'm not quite sure if we grasp the impact of what these stories represent. So I'm going to begin with a very, very familiar one here. So let me just start. So everybody probably heard of Nebuchadnezzar. I'd be curious if everybody could write it down and then spell Nebuchadnezzar. I couldn't. It's a word that's long. But anyway, Nebuchadnezzar, he took over, he conquered Israel or Judah, maybe all of them there. But he had this dream. So here they are captive in his kingdom, and he has this dream about this giant statue. And you know this, you know the statue and the metals it was made of. I think it was gold, silver, bronze, and then iron for the legs. But he, it was all mixed metal, and he had no way to interpret it. So, excuse me, I'm jumping ahead of myself. And when he had that dream, and then Daniel interpreted it for him, if you recall that line, when Daniel interpreted the dream about all the different kingdoms that would follow, he said this one line. He said, "O Nebuchadnezzar, you are that head of gold." And so this is what I think maybe triggered an ego trip for Nebuchadnezzar, and he built this giant statue. This giant statue, because he was the head of gold, and he was going to have everybody worship this statue. Once the music started, and it was going to be all kinds of music, and he would call people together, and he was saying, "When you hear that music start, that's when you bow down and you worship this statue." Well, we know that the Jews that were captured in part of the kingdom now, it's sad that all of them fell down and bowed except three. And you know who they are: Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they refused. But you know what? There's always that group of people. Somebody's jealous. Somebody's jealous that you're going to buck the system. You're gonna go against the government. You're going to go against the king. You know, hey, what's the big deal? Fall down and worship a statue. You're already captured and whatnot. What's the big deal? Well, let's read it. And then ask yourself, what would you have done in that situation? So we're going to just go through Daniel, starting at chapter 3, verse 12. Let's read a few scriptures right away. So they came and told on the Jews and were talking to Nebuchadnezzar. And here's what they said: "There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Their names were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee." They basically just said, you know, "There you are, king. You know, they have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, this is why I think he had a big ego trip, "in his rage and fury commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And then they brought these men before the king." Now, let's pause for a second. You would think disobeying the king was an immediate death sentence, and it usually was. But let's look what happened. So verse 14, he says, "Nebuchadnezzar, he spoke and said unto them, 'Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up?'" I give him credit. He was getting confirmation. He wasn't going on hearsay. So verse 15, he gives them a chance. He says, "Now if you be ready, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet," and this is all the instruments, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, "that if you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well." In other words, it's going to be okay. You do this, you're going to be okay. "But if you worship not, you shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" This is big old ego Nebuchadnezzar. "What kind of God do you have that's going to deliver you out of my hands?" And I expect he thinks that there was already going to be some resistance, because he already had the punishment sitting nearby. Anybody who didn't fall into that or bow down to the statue, they were going to be burned instantly. And so now he's giving them a chance. Okay, you're in their place. You're standing before the king with all that power and majesty, and you're just a lowly, probably a 16 to 18 year old. Think about it. What are you going to do? Well, let's read verse 15, or excuse me, 16. "So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered," all three of them together, "and they said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter.'" In other words, we're not going to skirt about the issue here. We're not going to downplay what just happened here. They're basically saying, you know what, we're not going to mince words. We're not careful about what we're going to say about this matter. So verse 17, here we go. Now, look at the faith of these men, these young men, probably still in their teenager. They're still teens, 19 maybe. He says, if it be so, you notice they weren't sure? If it be so, our God whom we serve, he is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king, meaning one way or the other. He's going to deliver us from you. But I want you to look at what verse 18 says. But if not, focus on those words, folks. These guys stood up for their faith. They knew how much of a sin and how God would have despised them for falling down. Not so much Nebuchadnezzar, but them to fall down and worship something that was not of God. Just like America is doing every single day. We're bowing ourselves to the silly cultural changes that are just an abomination to God. We're bowing down to that. We're not standing up. And I'm afraid churches are not standing up. So he says, but if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. They stood the ground. Basically, they said, there's no turning back. Hey, well, what are you going to do? You can't take back when that happens. You've done said it to the king. It's firm now. These young men, there's no turning back. The commitment lines were drawn. You know the story. They got thrown into the fire as promised. And thank God they delivered them. He delivered them. He really showed Nebuchadnezzar when he asked that question, who is there a God out there that's going to deliver you out of my hands, thinking how big he was? Well, he found out. And then that next Sunday school story that we love to tell, we love to show pictures of how it happened, but we don't grasp the commitment it took for it to happen. So now let's move on to years later. All these men that I just mentioned to you were likely came to Babylon when they were probably 16, 17 years old. Young men. Do we have young men with that kind of a faith and commitment to God? You realize we only know three names. Why don't we know other names? As far as I can tell, there were no other names who refused. I don't know. 16, 17, maybe even 18 years old. So now we jump ahead to maybe at least 60 years later. 60 years later. Another major, major event occurs. So just as Daniel interpreted the dream of the statue that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed about with the mixed metals, there were different kingdoms. Well, now Daniel is serving under a new king of Babylon called Darius. Darius the king. He's a Mede, or from Media, okay? I think he was the Mede. He's the new king of Babylon. Daniel probably came there when he was 16, 17 years old, and now I think I wrote it down, he's probably around 80 years old now. And this king, wise in my opinion, he set up a number of princes, he says. You know, we would call them like governors. You know how we have governors of every state? He would set up governors to govern his kingdom, and there was 120 princes to oversee his kingdom. Well, who's going to oversee the 120 people? Well, Darius set up three, and he called them presidents. Three presidents to oversee the 120 governors or princes, okay? And Daniel was one of them. And the way it was worded, we're not going to read verse 2, but verse 2 said, and Daniel was the first of the presidents. And I wondered if the way that's worded, if it meant he was in charge. So you had 120 princes or governors, and you had three presidents, Daniel was one of them, and the Bible says he was the first. So it makes me think he was head over all of these guys. When you're the top CEO of a kingdom, you're going to have people who hate you. Oh, they hated Daniel. And they even made comment in the Bible, it says, that they couldn't find any fault against the man. Oh, would to God that we had a government that we can't find fault in our president, that we can't find fault in our senators and representatives. Folks, I'm almost convinced, I don't think all of them, I don't want to lump all of them, but many, many, many in our leadership and government taking bribes, sleeping around, taking some form of corruption left and right. Left and right. I mean, I could go down the list and point out, not just Democrats, Republicans too. They're just as bad. In conservative circles, we use the term rhino. If you want to know what rhino means, Republican in name only. They claim to be Republican, but they're not. They're not real, a true conservative. And by the way, I never call myself Republican or Democrat. I'm a conservative. So anyway, Daniel was the first. And these other two presidents and 120 princes or governors were all jealous of Daniel. They were actually looking for reasons to find fault, probably because they couldn't get away with anything because of old Daniel. The man was just too good helping to run the government. Well, so they figured out a way. I assume they called a meeting. I don't know if it's happened, but I assume they called a meeting because they were all seemed to be in on it. They called a meeting, and they were going to trick old King Darius. How were they going to trick him? Just like Nebuchadnezzar. He's going to have an ego that's so, so big that he'll fall for anything. So let's go ahead and read that story. Daniel chapter 6, verse 6. It says here, now we're picking up on what's happening. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king, so they all came as a group, so you got 122, and they said unto the king, and this is how you start out, O king, live forever. Oh, how great you are, live forever, we want you to stay in power forever. You know, that sort of builds up the ego, doing the kissy stuff right at the beginning. Verse 7, and all the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes and the counselors and the captains, wow, I wonder how many people this was, have consulted together. There's that meeting I was thinking of, to establish a royal statute. Look at what's happening here. All these people, leaders in the government, decide that they wanted, they've made a consult, they've had a meeting without Daniel, and they've come up to the idea that, you know what, let's go talk to the king about this matter. And here's what they did. They wanted to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition or ask for something of any god or man for how long? 30 days, save of thee or except of you, king, O king. You get what's happening here, right? They're saying, O king, let's make a rule. Let's make a law. And we're going to say in this law that nobody in your kingdom can ask anything from God or a man. I wondered if that applied to sons and fathers. Hey, Dad, could you help me fix this car? You know, we always ask our dads and moms and everything to do something. But here he's saying, if you ask of anything for 30 days, O king, he shall be what? Cast into the den of lions. Now, reading this story, I can't help but wonder, why would this king, I'm just going to make a wild guess, but when it talks about the 120 princes, the presidents, the governors, the captains, and what was the other? Counselors, okay? There could have been as many as 500 or more people coming up to the king. Can you imagine an arena full of people asking the king to say, you know what, king? We want to make you the center of attention. For 30 days, nobody can ask anybody anything, not even their God, except for you. They can only ask you. Well, 30 days, that's not so long, really. So, verse 8, look at this. And now, O king, establish this decree. They're still talking. And sign the writing that it will not be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which alters not. You have to understand, this particular kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, once you wrote it down, once you signed it, you couldn't change it, not even the king. And I get his ego was probably so large, he's like, well, what would it hurt 30 days? You know, I can sign this, sure. I'll be the big guy, okay? So that's what they're doing. They convinced the king to do it. So now verse 9. Wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and the decree. He gave in. He was tricked. He was tricked. Verse 10. Here we go, folks. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, I don't know if he was there or not when all this was going on, but when he knew it was signed, he went into his house. Makes me think he did it immediately. And his windows being opened in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. In other words, just as before. I want to ask you, and I think I brought this up in another sermon, but if you were Daniel, wouldn't you have maybe had some conversation with yourself and say, well, you know what, I could put off praying for 30 days. Big deal. I mean, I can go 30 days and not talk to God. What would it hurt, you know? It's only going to be 30 days not talking to God. It'll be okay. You know, the culture's going to hell in a handbasket. That's the way Americans say. We'll just put off praying for a while. No. Would you have the commitment that Daniel had? Knowing that, one, it was written down and signed, knowing that there was a penalty, and knowing that the penalty was death. Not just a slap on the wrist, it was death. He was committed. And so he knelt down and prayed as he did before time, as he usually did. Now, verse 11. Then these men, and I'm sure they were waiting on it. They knew Daniel. And then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication, asking for things before his God. It's my opinion that Daniel was in such a high place of authority that as an 80-year-old man, he needed God's wisdom and help to lead him in overseeing that kingdom. He wasn't going to stop. Not even for 30 days. Well, you know the story. What was the outcome? He was thrown into the lion's den as promised. And by the way, King Darius felt sorry. Felt sorry he got tricked. Felt sorry he made that decree. Actually, it said, if you go ahead and read the rest of the story, which I didn't put up here, he worked all night. He actually fasted. It said sleep left him. And he was so worried about Daniel because the people came back. By the way, you got to understand, they weren't going to let Daniel slide. They came and told on Daniel, and they told the king. Now, remember, king, you signed it. It can't be changed. And he felt so sorry that Daniel was the one. Maybe he didn't know about Daniel's praying habits. I don't know. It's one of those things that's up for speculation. But the fact is, now he knows, and now he's sorry, and he fasted. Now, this is something else, by the way. Faith, when you stand up for God, sometimes your faith can affect even unbelievers. Darius was an unbeliever, but I believe he prayed that night. I believe he prayed all night, and it said he fasted. He wouldn't even let the people come and play music to lull him to sleep. That's what often musicians did for kings. They play real soft music to lull him to sleep. Wanted the king to get some good rest. You don't want the king waking up grumpy. Well, you know the story. He fasted all night. He didn't sleep. He probably prayed all night long. And as soon as the dawn broke, he rushed down to check Daniel And you know this, he was safe. Was safe. Think about the commitment it takes for three young men, teenagers most likely, to stand up to the great king of Nebuchadnezzar and be willing to die. Even go so far as to say, you know what, I believe in God and I believe he's able to deliver us. But if not, do you have that kind of commitment? Do you have that kind of commitment? I know God can save me from this. I know God can heal me from this. But if not, I'll serve him. There's no turning back now. There's no turning back. So yes, Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, and by miracle he was delivered. And I actually wrote that down. So what's the point of those two stories? What you got to understand is the Lord either saves us from our troubles or he's with us in our troubles, just like he was with the three Hebrew children in the fire. Folks, do you realize those events changed history? Changed it for the better. So now you may be asking yourself, well, you know what, those are wonderful stories, but that only happens in the Old Testament. Well, first of all, we all should take a look and examine. There's actually a book or a magazine, maybe it's both. It's called The Voice of the Martyrs. Voice of the Martyrs. These are people who are collecting stories of all the people in the world today, who die under penalty of death for believing and serving Christ. And I believe that our country is soft. I believe us Christians, all of us, me included, I believe we're soft. I believe if it came down to a point that we had to stand on our faith and say, I will not turn back. I have decided to follow Jesus and I'm not going to turn back. No matter what happens. Really? No matter what happens? Well, let me give you an example. It was around, I wrote it down, it was in the 1850s. This is actually before the American Civil War. But in the 1850s, some missionaries were called to go out and preach and evangelize. And some missionaries went to the country of India. Okay, country of India. And they had heard that up in this northeast section of India, northeast section of India, that there was these tribes known as headhunter tribes. And basically, the reason they were headhunters was because if they ever got in a battle, the way they showed their superiority, if they conquered you, they'd cut the heads off, especially the leaders, and hang them up on the walls. Can you imagine that? Be pretty stinky to come in that house. But the fact is, they'd hang your head high on those walls just to show how great they were. Well, these missionaries went to this headhunter-type tribes in this particular area. None of us know the name of the area. I do now. I didn't before. And decided to spread the gospel of Jesus. Well, guess what? They weren't welcome. Of course they're not welcome. They're changing the faith of a local community. So they weren't welcome. So they were actually persecuted somewhat, mostly shunned and pushed aside. But this one family, we only know, at least what I've read, we only know the name of the man, the husband. His name, and it's spelled N-O-K-S-E-N-G, pronounced Noxang. Noxang was the man who the missionaries had preached to, and he gave his heart to Christ. And when he gave his heart to Christ, at some point, I don't know when, whether it was immediate or some days later, he actually started to write a song about giving his heart to Christ. And his family believed in Christ. They were the whole family, and it became contagious to the point that they were so excited that they had to tell everybody, and they started to tell their the people in the village about Jesus Christ, and it was affecting the whole village. Until finally the whole village was getting wind of this and they said, oh, wait a minute. This guy's changing our beliefs. So they went and captured the family. A man, his wife, and two young sons. They captured them and brought them into a, I'm not sure what you would call it, like a square, a town square. And he brought this family and set them before the tribal chief. I want you to watch this video. It's 4 minutes and some odd seconds long. Let's go ahead and play.
There's a true story of a small village in India. And in this village, there was this family that came to a saving faith in Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord. This agitated the village so much, and everybody became so upset that an angry mob gathered and shoved them into the public square. The village chief confronted them, and he said to the man, "If you and your family will not recant your faith, you all will surely die." The man didn't know what to say or what to do. And so the only thing that came to mind for him were the words of a song that he himself had composed when he had first surrendered his life to God. And so he began to sing, "I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back." And with that, horrifically, his children were killed.
"I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back.
He was given another chance, this time with his wife's life on the line. And yet he continued to sing, "Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back.
Though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back."
After her tragic death, he was given one final opportunity, this time to save himself. And yet he continued to sing.
"Cross before me, the world behind me. The cross before me, the world behind me. The cross before me.
That man and his family died on that day, something remarkable happened. A seed was planted in the heart of that village chief, a seed that began to grow over time, and eventually he called the community together in that very same neighborhood, in that very same square, and he renounced his former faith and declared his allegiance to Jesus Christ. And a celebration broke out in that moment, and the gospel began to flourish and to grow in that community, not just in that village, but across the whole region, because they had seen real faith, and they knew the true character of God because of a family that believed and sacrificed, even under the penalty of death.
No turning back. No turning back.
Verse 37, he that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He that loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Oh, Father, how much commitment do we have, Father? Examine our hearts as we meet to talk with you. Show us, Lord, if we fail to measure up to the standard that you would have us to follow. God, save us from ourselves. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.